Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me for tonight's special 2022 County Championship Division 2 review show, I'm delighted to welcome back my Nottinghamshire-based Yorkshire supporting co-host, Mr. Matt Wiley. So Matt, first things first, mate, thank you very much for hopping back onto the podcast. I know it is a little bit later than usual, but again, we did have rather busy weekends, as we'll discuss in due course. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Warm, I think, is a good good way to describe it, isn't it, mate? Yes. No. Really happy to be back on. Obviously, I always enjoy it. I've had a very good day watching. We'll get onto this in the next show, with the next round of the County Championship. It's been a good day so far, and everything ready to get going with the review of last week's play.
It's been a scorcher, though, hasn't it, here in the UK? For those who don't know, we are experiencing a bit of a heat wave. I say that as though it's nothing major. I think it's actually been the hottest day in recorded history here in the UK, in particular here in the Midlands. It's been about 40 degrees. It's been scorching. It really has. I think that's an understatement, if anything. But yes, we will discuss that, the conditions, and of course the games in a lot more detail in our next review show for the 11th round. But instead tonight, listeners, we are here for part two of the round 10 review show. We've already uploaded the Division 1 stuff, so if you want to go and check that out, you can find that all on the podcast website. But tonight we're here to discuss Division 2. And what better place than to start at Northwood, where Worcestershire pulled off a magnificent 7-wicket victory over Middlesex at Merchant Taylor's School. Now, Middlesex won the toss, elected to have a bat first in this game, which appeared to have backfired quite spectacularly, as Joe Leach, he took 3 for 58, and Dylan Pennington, with figures of 2 for 41, ripped through the Saxes' top order to leave the hosts in all sorts of trouble on a dire score of 68 for 6 in just the 25th over of the match. To their immense credit, though, Luke Holman, he chipped in with 62, and Tom Helm, he batted very nicely for a 50, did provide some much-needed resistance for the host with their respective ripostes. But even these valiant efforts were only enough to take the home side up to a meagre total of 188 all out by the end of their first innings. Now, in response to this, Worcestershire themselves also got off to a pretty shocking start, as Toby Rowland-Jones and Tim Murta sighed through the pair's top order to lead the visitors reeling on a perilous score of 49 for 5. But to immense relief of the visitors, Ed Barnard, the man who will be leaving the club at the end of the 2022 season, produced the goods yet again, manufacturing a dashing 69 out from just 96 balls to ultimately take the pairs up to a total of 191 all out by the end of their first innings. Now, before we talk about the rest of the game and the incredible individual efforts that we saw from Ed Pollock to seal this victory for Worcestershire, Matt, just a few words on the pitch, if you could. It was very difficult, wasn't it, batting additions. Both sides in that first innings being dismissed for less than 200 runs, and yes, we did see some excellent bowling from the likes of Joe Leach, Pennington, Rowland-Jones and Murta, but it was a pretty difficult pitch to bat on, wasn't it, at Merchant Taylor's in the 10th round?
Yeah, quite clearly. I mean, when one team is blown away or, you know, suffers a bit of a collapse like that or a stutter of sorts, you can put it down to poor technique or poor application. But when it's both teams, you know, clearly then it's external factors, isn't it? And I think you do always have to remember that, you know, it's the same for both teams. Both teams have the same disadvantage if the pitch presents that, and the same advantage if it turns out to be a good wicket, obviously. So I'm never too keen to, obviously pitches can influence the outcome of a game, but I'm never too keen to go in for the whole, oh, the pitch was doing this, the pitch was doing that, because it is the same for both teams. If it had deteriorated massively between innings, or, you know, improved and flattened out massively between innings, then maybe you could criticise it and say that's not a good cricket wicket because it hasn't been prepared with the long-term game, you know, a four-day game in mind. But I think, to be fair, it wasn't anything too, you know, it wasn't Viv Richards Stadium in 2009, wasn't it? It wasn't dangerous. It wasn't overly anything especially out of the ordinary. It was just a bit tough to bat on. And, yeah, like I said, both teams had it, and in the end it produced what was quite a good, a really good game of cricket. And obviously, as we'll come on to, Ed Pollock showed that with a bit of application and a bit of technique, you could score runs on it. It wasn't impossible.
Well, you could. I think that's a very valid point, in fact, Matt. You could actually score runs on it, but I'd describe it as a bit of a spicy wicket. There was some inconsistent bounce at times. There was some nip off the surface. It was challenging. I think that's how I would describe it personally. But as you rightfully said, it ended with a fantastic game of cricket at a very, very iconic outground as well. And talking of Middlesex's second innings then, I think the Saxes will be bitterly disappointed, because even though there was that challenging factor and the nature of the pitch itself playing into consideration, there wasn't a single 50-plus score in the second innings for the home side. In fact, Luke Holman was the leading run scorer with just 46 from 86 balls, as Worcestershire limited the home side to just 240 all out to give themselves a target of 238 runs to chase on day three at Merchant Taylor's School. And this is where we pick up the main discussion points for this week's review show, let alone just the game. This knock from Ed Pollock. In these conditions, on this surface, this was arguably one of the knocks of Division 2 in 2022. He came out like a raging bull in Northwood this week. 113 from 77 balls, 11 fours, 7 sixes, and a strike rate of 146.75 to bring up his second career first-class century in astonishing fashion. Matt, a few words on this knock. I know there's a lot of superlatives, there's a lot of adjectives that we could utilise to describe the knock itself. But in terms of the importance of that individual feat in this game, but also more importantly, on a wider scale, the wider context of Division 2, just how big of a knock is this in terms of the title race for both Middlesex and, of course, Worcestershire?
Yeah, it's massive, isn't it? Like you said, there's so many superlatives that you could use to describe it, but they're all worthy because it's so influential, because it's knocked Middlesex, obviously. It's boosted Worcestershire. It's done Nottinghamshire a big favour. It's obviously the situation is, when you're in a division that has only eight teams, it's quite a small league, isn't it, in professional sport. The fact that, you know, you can finish in seventh. If you finish seventh in the Premier League, people go, oh, that's a very good season. I mean, depending on who you are, but it's a very good season. To finish seventh in this, you know, that's second bottom. And it's always felt a bit, you know, especially when Division 1 was eight teams and you'd get relegated by finishing seventh, it always felt a bit, But the point is that it can be, that knocks like these can do so much. And because it's so tightly packed, that's what makes them so brilliant. And to do it under that sort of pressure. And, I mean, Ed Pollock, clearly, I think Warwickshire probably will look at him and think he's the one that we let go. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, they've fully got their revenge by nabbing back Moeen Ali and taking Ed Barnard with him at the same time. But he's Worcestershire known, obviously, he came to their academy, so there's no real sense of poaching. And they've just, I suppose you could say, taken back what's rightfully theirs, as maybe Warwickshire have done with Moeen Ali. But the fact that he went back because he wanted to be that established red ball player after spending so long and being so successful with Warwickshire, Birmingham Bears T20 team, and being that aggressor, he's shown that it's both possible to take that aggression and useful in red ball cricket, because as we've seen with England, I mean, you know, bad ball being aggressive, it's paying off massively. But, you know, red ball isn't always about grinding your way to centuries. You can score this sort of aggressive, fast-paced, you know, you can score sexy runs in red ball stuff. It is possible to do. And as it turns out, you know, it can win you games. And I think England have shown that when you're chasing a score that's potentially a bit challenging, I mean, you know, we've talked about how spicy the pitch was, you're going to need to be a bit aggressive. You're going to need to, there's not always the time to wait for those bad balls, because if you wait for the bad ball, there's also the possibility that you'll end up giving, you know, there's more chance that you'll get a good ball and, you know, you collapse again. So, yeah, it was so domineering. It was such to take the kind of seize the initiative like that. It was just massive for the game, and it was massive for the context of the league as well, like you said. And it's given Worcestershire a real platform, and as well, you might say they were a little bit unfancied. It's given them a bit of a boost for a team who people perhaps didn't really think would be in this position come this stage of the season.
Well, 100%, Matt, that's an excellent point. And we've seen the struggles of the Pairs, or the Rapids, as they're known in the T20 Blast. It's been a very difficult season, both on and off the field, for the West Midlands outfit. But this is a massive confidence boost, a 7-wicket victory, to do it in that manner as well. And the fact that they chased down 238 runs within just 46.4 overs is incredibly impressive. It really is. I think we can't just gloss over that purely with the Ed Pollock knock. I also think the likes of D'Oliveira with his 33, Jake Libby chipped in with 31, Taylor Cornell dug deep with a 31 out from 98 balls. This was a proper team performance from the Pairs in Northwood this week, so they should be tremendously impressed. But on the flip side of that, it's also incredibly, incredibly disappointing for Middlesex, isn't it? Because this is a county which has now been toiling away in Division 2 ever since getting relegated in 2017. They've been all up there this season. They've been right in the mix for promotion. And yet these batting collapses keep on happening, don't they? I'm looking at the averages as well so far this summer for Middlesex, at least with the bat in hand, and they're not actually that bad. You know, there's a lot of players averaging over 40. Got John Simpson averaging 50.4. Mark Stoneman's averaging 46. Sam Robson is averaging 44.46. So they are scoring runs, but it seems to be one or two players a game, doesn't it, Matt? Would you agree that that's the issue that's plaguing the Saxes in the Championship, in particular, in the last 2 to 3 games?
Yeah, I would. I think it's definitely what Worcestershire did there in completing a successful chase is almost... It's almost the success that they had where everybody filled their role. And, you know, Pollock played aggressively and went on to seize the initiative there. Taylor Cornell backed him up well. D'Oliveira, everybody played the natural game. Everybody knows their roles and did those roles well. That is the thing, isn't it, where Middlesex are lacking, because it seems that they're a bit muddled. Not many people, only, like you said, only one or two are stepping up and fulfilling the role that they need to play, and a few are falling short. But it's a really difficult situation to solve because it's not always the same players, is it? It's not like you've got the same players that are consistently performing and the same ones that aren't, i.e. you can build the team around the ones that are and drop the ones that aren't, because it's almost like you know, oh, well, do we drop him? No, he's done quite well in this one. Do we drop him? No, he did well. You know, it's a bit of a mishmash and no one really, yeah, it kind of smarts of not really having that clear eyed, that clear plan. And I think what you said about toiling away in Division 2 is very telling, because they're so desperate to get out of Division 2 and because they're so focused on pouring all the resources into that, they can sort of lose sight of, you know, the bigger picture. And they've got, you know, you've got to have a clear plan to do it. And almost by being too focused and too kind of tunnel vision, they maybe haven't built that clear plan. They've gone it. They're not really sure maybe what the right hand, the left hand isn't sure what the right hand's doing. It's almost a bit muddled, it feels. So yeah, it's going to be tough for them. They're not in the form that they'd want to be. I mean, especially considering, you know, we're coming into the final third of the season. We've got one more or two more rounds of games following this Worcestershire one in high summer, and then we get on to the back end of it in September. Final third of the season, it's not where Middlesex want to be at all.
Well, it isn't, and we mentioned this, didn't we, a couple of shows back. The T20 Blast block almost came at the wrong time, didn't it, for the Saxes. They had all that momentum in both red ball and white ball cricket, and all of a sudden, they've lost a couple of games, and losing becomes a habit, doesn't it? And that, unfortunately, is plaguing the North London side in Division 2 at the moment. And as a result of these losses, this has now brought in another couple of counties in the promotion race, which is a beautiful transition, actually, to our next game, Matt, which you were at personally in the flesh at Sophia Gardens in Cardiff this week, where Nottinghamshire and Glamorgan played out a draw in South Wales. So Matt, as our on-ground correspondent, I suppose, for this week, would you be able to take us through the game in terms of summarising the events? And also, in terms of Glamorgan, this is the big question that I wanted to ask for this week. having watched them now at Trent Bridge beat Nottinghamshire by 7 wickets and play out this draw, are they dark horses to pit Middlesex into that second automatic promotion place?
Yes, I would say definitely. It seems like Nottinghamshire, who are a really, really good team, objectively you have to say they are a good team, seem to be slightly allergic to Glamorgan. They're the only team to beat them. They've had them on the back foot in, I would say, probably 6 or 7 out of the 8 days of cricket we've seen them meeting so far. And they absolutely crushed them at Sapphire Gardens in the One Day Cup last year as well. It seems to be a bit of a, almost becoming a bit of a mental block of late, which is really strange for a strong team like Notts. But yes, if you want to go through the game, Stephen Mullaney won the toss and opted to have a bowl, which was considered a bit surprising by those in attendance, myself included, considering the lovely sunny conditions. But the pitch did have a bit of green on it. It was, let's see how this plays out. And to be fair, I think you can say, got it reasonably right. Glamorgan were dismissed inside the first day. There were a couple of partnerships that at times threatened to get away from Notts. Sam Northeast, Kieran Carlson and Colin Ingram all getting a good start, but then having their innings just broken up, just I think at the right time, and Glamorgan posted 318, which at the time I thought was fractionally above par. I thought they did quite well to get past 300, and that mental edge of getting past 300 might serve them quite well. But Notts were then unbeaten at the close, and it looked like Brett Hutton was talking that it was a good day for them, a good day for Notts, and things seemed quite okay. Then it seemed to get even better for Notts. Haseeb Hameed, 70, Matt Montgomery on first-class debut, who looks an absolutely class player. I'm sure we'll come on to him. He played some lovely strokes. There was one brilliant on-drive down the ground that I was just purring about in the press box. And they were absolutely cruising, 233 for 3, and everything seemed pretty rosy. And then, for about sort of 10, 15 overs, either side of the new ball, the game just changed. That was the game-changing moment. That was everything just went topsy-turvy. Nottinghamshire were bowled out for 285, and that was still just 20, 30 runs still behind, which proved to be enough for Glamorgan to then just ram home a massive advantage. 2 centuries in their second innings. Eddie Byron played brilliantly. What a recruit he's been. Sam Northeast again. It shows that their business has been really pretty astute. And they just got themselves into a position there from being dominated themselves to being the dominators. And they just put Nottinghamshire in a position where they absolutely couldn't win. Peter Moore said at that point he was obviously delighted to take the draw as Nottinghamshire batted out the final day with Joe Clark getting 95 and Lyndon James unbeaten 76. Now, that was really, it was a really solid, strong rearguard effort, don't get me wrong, but Peter Moore did say that the pitch had maybe had some of its guts taken out of it by the fact that it had dried up so much. So they always had that confidence and that belief, he said, but it felt perhaps like there were fewer demons in the pitch than Glamorgan certainly would have liked. But in the wider context of the game, again, we go back to this point that Glamorgan just seemed to be the dark horses for promotion, definitely. And certainly not as sort of, they've got this kind of bogey team. It just seems to be that they're the team that everybody has them, all the best team will find themselves in this position. And it seems to be Glamorgan that can repeatedly put them in that position. But no, it was a really, really good, hard-fought 4 days of cricket, I have to be honest, and very enjoyable to watch and cover.
I can imagine it was, to be honest, Matt. So you saw some fantastic bowling displays and some magnificent batting efforts as well. And I wanted to touch in particular upon Matt Montgomery before we talk about Glam and we talk about those 2 excellent centuries, because we do need to give them a lot of praise for those knocks, both Eddie Byram and Sam Northeast. But Matt Montgomery is an interesting prospect, isn't he? Initially from South Africa. I remember watching him last year in the second 11 for Warwickshire. He was part of the team which won the second 11 T20 Cup. Him and Chris Benjamin were in the same team. Two excellent prospects for their respective counties. You mentioned the on-drive. There's an element of class, isn't there? Panache and flair about Matt Montgomery's innings. He scored 80 from 166 balls, 9 of which came from boundaries. For the Notts fans out there listening to the podcast, just a bit more insight in on his batting, if you could, Matt, and just how impressive a prospect you think he could be for the men in green and gold for these next few years.
He's a really, really good signing. He's that classic example, I think, of spotting, of using the experience. Obviously, Peter Moore's a man with 40 years experience in the game. Mick Newell, a man with a similar amount. You know, this is a really, really refined and astute team that spots this talent and brings it in. And yes, I suppose it was a little bit of a risk to that you sign him, and he was signed, like you say, as a second team almost to participate in the One Day Cup last year with a view to going on. And I've got to be, I was surprised that they'd chosen him to bat at number three. I thought he was maybe going to be used a bit more further down the order, but he played like a number three. He plays so calmly and confidently. It was a completely chanceless 80 that I saw. There's plenty, like you said, plenty of panache and plenty of class in the inning. And it's just, for such a young player and such an inexperienced player, and you consider this, you know, it wasn't his first class debut. It wasn't his Notts debut. He's played for Notts in another format. He's played for another team in first class. But it, bring all those two together, it was his Notts first class debut. And I think you have to consider that the County Championship is one of the strongest first-class teams, first-class competitions in the world. Yeah, yes, this is its second division, but there's not a huge amount of difference, I suppose, in between the two, especially not as far as Notts are concerned at the top end of the table. So, yeah, it's just for him to play like that, and for him to look so assured and confident and compact at the crease. He's got a really nice technique. Is really, really promising, I think, and it definitely showed that he can be a heck of a player for seasons to come.
Well, he most certainly can. I'd echo that sentiment absolutely, Matt. He's a great prospect. I think he was averaging over 50 as well in List A cricket, if my memory does serve me correctly. So, Matt Montgomery, watch out for him, Notts fans, an excellent prospect, to say the very least. And talking of shrewd pieces of business, let's talk about those two Glamorgan batters, Eddie Byram and Sam Northeast, starting with Eddie Byram, 144 from 204 deliveries, 21 fours, 1 6, a strike rate of 70.58. And again, if we look at the wider context of his performances in Division 2, so far this summer, in three matches, he scored 435 runs with an average of 72.5. Great piece of business. And I mentioned this, didn't I, on a previous show about the ceiling of Eddie Byram. He was always a very impressive prospect for Somerset, but unfortunately never quite kicked on to the extents which we thought he would have. At Glamorgan, pastures a new, brand new opportunity. Maybe he could kick on. And I'm very, very delighted for him. I must say, he's a very, very good cricketer, to say the least. And talking of underrated and underappreciated cricketers, Matt, a few words on Sam Northeast, because he did go around the county carousel, didn't he? In 2021, came to Notts for a bit, went to Yorkshire, left Hampshire County Cricket Club, and ended up in South Wales for Glamorgan. In terms of his performances so far this summer, he's been immensely impressive, hasn't he, for the Welsh outfit?
He really has, yeah, and it's testament to his ability. You can't put it down to anything else. He's got that in spades. I think it was harsh in the way he departed Hampshire because it was so clear that they were shopping him around. Like you said, he moved around so much and it was so clear that they were trying to get rid of him. It's a bit of a harsh way to treat him, really. I think he would slot into that Hampshire team. I think he's got the ability to be in that Hampshire team. I mean, you know, you probably have to be honest and say he's not quite on the same level as maybe James Vince or something, but he is definitely he could quite easily fit into a title chase in Hampshire, based on what I've seen of him. He faces up to, you know, faced up, Dane Patterson, for example, international test match standard bowler, faced up to him, little problems. he's got that, just that ability that you need, that class that you need to succeed in this game. And he plays so well. He's not exactly a, you know, ugly type hoik. He plays the classy shot that you need, and he dominates bowling attacks as well. And I think, to be honest, you really have to do say Hampshire's loss is Glamorgan's game. It really is. And, you know, we see this across all sports, don't we? You know, counties sign players and then they can't fit them all in, and then you think, oh, he's the one that got away, they're the one that we could have kept hold of, etc., etc. And yeah, it's happened before, it's happening now, and it will happen again. But I think, yeah, if you ask Hampshire to pick one player that they wish they hadn't let go, I think it would probably right now have to be Sam Northeast for sure.
I would agree with that, although there is someone else who we will discuss in due course when talking about Sussex, who also might fit that category, a certain Tom Allsop. I would also say he has been very impressive for the Martlets this summer, but Sam Northeast, 717 runs, an average of 47.8 for Glamorgan so far this summer. He is their leading run scorer. Again, it just displays a great piece of business. Very shrewd, very acute. That's how I describe it from the Welsh outfit. And as you said, Hampshire's loss is definitely Glamorgan's game. He's been absolutely sensational in a Glamorgan shirt in the summer of 2022. But aside from the promotion race then, Matt, let's go to the opposite end of the table and let's go down to Hove, where we saw a record-breaking draw between Sussex and Leicestershire County Cricket Club at the First Central County Ground. Now, in terms of the context of this game, before we talk about one of the most incredible partnerships we may ever have the privilege of witnessing in county cricket, Sussex had won the toss and elected to have a bowl first in this match, which appeared to have paid off remarkably. The Martlets churning out 588 runs from 142.5 first innings overs with the likes of Tom Allsop. He scored a masterful 150 from 243 deliveries. Ali Orr, the expansive opener, scored a dashing at 70 from just 85 balls, which included 9 fours and 2 sixes. Then you had Ollie Carter. Again, he's having a very impressive summer. He scored 75. Delray Rawlinch chipped in with 75. James Cole scoring 59. And at this moment of the game, you're thinking, Sussex are in the driving seat. Yes, the pitch is flat, but what a confidence boost that is for a side which has been pretty short of runs in this year's county championship. And then after that immensely impressive start with the bats, it could not have got much better with the ball. Stephen Finn, the veteran England seamer, dismissing Hassan Azad on the very first ball of the Leicestershire innings to leave the Foxes on 1 for none in the very first over. After this, however, we were treated to some extraordinary batting from the visitors. Rishi Patel falling agonisingly short of what would have been a thoroughly deserved century. The opener scoring 99 from 240 balls before edging one behind to Ollie Carter off the bowling of James Coles. And then Louis Kimber, a former guest here on the County Cricket Podcast, Lincolnshire's finest, scoring a brilliant 104 from 149 deliveries to rack up his maiden first-class century. So at this moment of the game, Matt, it's pretty even Stevens, isn't it? Just looking at the scorecard for the Foxes, they're 279 for 4 in the 85th over. And then it happened. History was made at the First Central County Ground as Colin Ackerman and Vion Mulder produced an absolutely extraordinary record fifth wicket stand of 477 runs. That is the highest partnership in Leicestershire's entire first-class history, and it is also the highest fifth wicket stand in the entire county circuit. Colin Ackerman take about 277 not out, and fellow countryman, although Vion does play for the Proteas, whereas Colin Ackerman plays for the Netherlands, Vion Mulder, the Proteas all-rounder, scored 235 not out to take Leicestershire up to 756 for 4 declared. It was the highest total in Leicestershire's entire first-class history. And Matt, I'll be very impressed, to be honest, if you know the year that the previous record was set in. But if you had to have a guess, What year do you think the previous record of 701 for four declared was set in? That's a great piece of trivia for both yourself and, of course, listeners out there.
I'm sure Leicester tweeted about this, didn't they?
They did.
I did see the tweet when they said it was the highest ever. 1924.
That is not a bad guess. That really isn't a bad guess. It was very early on in the county championship. 1906 against Worcestershire at New Road. 701 for four declared. So we've seen a 116-year record being broken on the South Coast this week. Matt, again, we could throw every single superlative in the English language at this partnership. But if you could describe it, how would you go about doing so?
Dominant, I think, is what you'd have to say, isn't it, really? Yeah, like you said, there's very little you can say other than just sort of stand back and admire, really. I think when you look at the control that they exerted, yes, obviously the pitch was flat, but like I said, I've mentioned the pitch was the same for both teams, and yeah, the control that they exerted and the dominance that they had over the bowling attack, and the bowling attack got more and more tired. I think that might again be a little bit of that would have to be my critique of Sussex's tactic of going really, really young. You know, when situations like this arise, you're kind of struggling to find a bowler other than Stephen Finn, who's got the experience and the know-how and the tenacity to keep going to break that. Not that the youngsters are going to stop or try any hard or anything like that, but I'm just saying that possibly you need a bit of experience in that situation. You need to keep a clear mind and keep your plans, you know, clear in your head. And I think without that experience, that becomes a little bit more difficult to do. But yeah, I mean, you can't take anything away from those two. It was just sheer. It was. You talk about near perfect days, don't you? Near perfect innings. Both were unbeaten. Both didn't get anything that they could have even. You know, both didn't even get anywhere near to being out. They were just thoroughly, thoroughly dominant. And yes, I think by this point it was pretty clear that the game was always going to end in a draw. But, you know, take the opportunity when you've got it. You know, you're presented with this, and Ackerman and Mulga just, yeah, both teams are probably too far out of the promotion race to be considered contenders. But, you know, they had a bit of fun down there, didn't they? And that's what the game has to be. You know, when you stop having, you know, when the game stops being fun, what are you left with? So, yeah, have a bit of fun while the opportunity is there. And that's what they did.
Well, yeah, they did, Matt. They certainly did. Yeah, records tumbling all over the shop.
Well, that certainly did. I'm not sure about the specific bowlers, but yeah.
Well, I was just about to mention that, just looking at some of the bowling figures. Yeah, some pretty horrifying reading if you're a Sussex fan. Delroy Rawlins, none for 223 from 49 overs. James Coles, one for 198. Even Stephen Finn, three for 108. Just run after run being scored and piled on. Down in Hove this week, it really was a week for the batting units. And of course, you have to give immense credit to the likes of Colin Ackerman and Vian Mulder for that extraordinary partnership. Again, a 116-year record. That's staggering that we've been around to witness that. So, yeah, fair play to the two of them. And of course, to the rest of the Leicestershire batting unit as well. I mean, Louis Kimber, great to see him, you know, excelling at the top of the order for the Foxes. He's very, very good at cricket. And for him to rack up that maiden first-class century is brilliant. It's great to see. So big up to Louis Kimber. Big up to Rishi Patel as well. I know they've been slightly overshadowed by that record stand, but I thought they did deserve quite the mention on the podcast this week as well. But the other big news from this game, aside from Ali Orr then racking up another ton in the second inning, scoring 106 from 123 balls, he looked an imperious touch in this particular game. But the unfortunate news for the Martlets is the injury to Tom Haynes. He's out for 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. Matt, in terms of, I suppose, the One Day Cup and the rest of the Championship, that's going to be a massive loss, isn't it, for Sussex to lose their talismanic captaincy figure?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think you have to remember, obviously, that they're not, it's not like their season's going to fall apart because you can't say, oh, it's colossal in the promotion race, because obviously Sussex aren't in the promotion race. But yeah, you're always keen to, you want to finish as high as possible. And as I've already said, you know, that Sussex side is pretty lacking in experience. And to be honest, I mean, Haynes, I know Haynes is only young, obviously, but he's one of the more experienced figures in it. He's, you know, he was first to 1,000 runs last year. He's a very, very talented player. And it's, you might want to say it's maybe come at the I mean, there's never a right time for an injury to happen, is there? But it's definitely tough for the One Day Cup, obviously, because he would have been, like to think, a key figure in any attempt that they might have to win that. And you might maybe fancy them as one of the stronger teams, having, you know, they're not going to lose too many players. They've got, obviously, a really strong academy, second team kind of, you know, lineup of players below the big names that they'll lose to the 100. But I think in the context of the county championship, it's not as damaging as it could have been. You know, if this had happened maybe in, after the second game or something, when we were still in April and there were, you know, there was that six or seven, that game, that run of games where there were five, six, seven game weeks back to back. And then it would have been damaging because they'd have lost him for a lot of time. The season started off in the on the back foot, or they've been put on the back foot not too long into the season, and that would have been damaging. But I think now they've got a clearer idea of where they're going to finish in the championship. It's not exactly going to derail any promotion charge. It's, yes, it's tough, but it could have been worse, would be my assessment.
No, that's fair enough, Matt. And of course, that does provide some opportunities, doesn't it, for the likes of Ali Orr and Tom Allsop.
Absolutely.
To step up. And I will mention Tom Allsop in a lot more detail in the 11th round wrap-up show, because he's having a very impressive summer for the Martlets. Again, put on a big score today, as we'll discuss in the upcoming show. I'm not going to spoil that just yet for the future listeners, but yeah, I've been very impressed with him. We talk about shrewd pieces of business. Tom Allsop definitely fits that bill for the Southern County in 2022. But aside from those first three games then, Matt, let's look ahead to the fourth and final of the Division 2 games that took place in the 10th round this week. Let's head up to the Seat Unique Riverside, where Derbyshire and Durham played out a rather compelling draw. Now, in this game, Durham won the toss and, interestingly, elected to have a bowl first, which appeared to have paid off rather spectacularly. Birthday boy Chris Rushworth celebrating his 36th birthday went and took figures of 7 for 44 from just 21 overs. It was a sublime piece of pace bowling from Rushy on home soil this week, as he just scythed through the Derbyshire top and middle order with ease to leave the visitors reeling on 85 for 5 in the 31st over of their innings. Fortunately for the East Midlands outfit, though, Anuj Dahl and Leyas De Plooy did put together a rather strong resistance up in the northeast this week, producing a valuable 166-run sixth wicket stand to ultimately help take the visitors up to a competitive first innings total of 283 all out. Now, in response to this, Durham themselves got off to an appalling start to their first innings, finding themselves in all sorts of trouble on a score of 142 for 7 within the first 42 overs of their innings, as a result of some excellent bowling from the likes of Toby Pettman, Ben Aitchison and Sam Connors. But luckily for Durham, and Matt, I want to know your opinion on this actually, the tail actually wagged up at the Riverside this week. It's not often that we see it to this extent actually, where pretty much the entirety of the lower order does produce some valuable runs. But we saw the likes of Ben Rain, he chipped in with 36. Debutant Tom McIntosh, if there are any Scotland fans out there, remember this guy's name. 51 on first class debut, and some of the shots that he was producing, in particular down the ground, were sensational. I really like the look of him as a prospect with both the bats and the gloves in hand. So remember the name Tom McIntosh. Definitely someone to keep a close eye out on if you are a Durham or a Scotland fan. But as I said, he scored 51 from 100. Fellow debutant Stan McAllendon also scored 26 from 87. And Rushy, after taking 7 for 44, also went and scored 33 from just 27 balls. 5 fours and a 6. Pretty much did it all, to be honest, in this game. It was Rushy's all-rounder season up at the Riverside this week. But in terms of those respective knocks, I suppose, Matt, just how important were they in terms of keeping Durham competitive in this particular match?
They were crucial, weren't they? Plain and simple, they were absolutely key. And I keep saying this about, you know, players like Keith Barker. I keep coming back to him as an example, but somebody who can corral the lower order, shepherd the tail, and make sure that he's scoring runs while the rest of the team are either protected or have the confidence to score the runs themselves. Because, you know, there's next to no pressure on a lower order, a 9, 10 and 11, to score runs. That is not their role in a team. But it's never a bad thing if they can. You know, you would never say, oh, just, you know, there's no pressure on you. You don't need to worry. Just have a few shots and have a bit of fun and see what happens. You know, you always want those runs. They go out there to bat because they want to score runs. And if you've got that ability to be able to just ensure that the tail can wag, give it the best chance possible of doing that, then that's a massive, massive quality to have. And I'll be honest, McIntosh, I haven't seen much of him. McAlinden as well, a new player that Durham are trying to blood. I mean, we've seen a little bit of this happening with Durham actually recently. There's coming through from their academy, the middle order batter as well, Bushnell. He's showed off what he can do in recent county championship games, and it's just it's so brilliant for Durham as a team that everybody was able to contribute with the bat because it gives them that lift. And there's a lot less, obviously, I suppose you could say, oh, it's not great that Chris Rushworth has to go out there earlier than planned and, you know, have to spend longer at the crease than they would have planned because it ties him out for his main role of bowling. But I don't think it does. I think an innings of 33 off 27 gives you a little bit of a boost, doesn't it? It gives you a bounce. It means you're running in with a bit of a pep in your step. You know, right, I've done this, I'm going to have a bowl at you and see if you can do it as well. So, yeah, it was massive, and it ensured Durham stayed competitive, didn't it, really?
Well, it did. It did indeed, Matt. And, yeah, Rushy's innings in particular, I must say, was very entertaining, to say the least. In particular for someone who, I'm just looking at his first-class strike rate, 61.97, it's not too bad. But, yeah, it's not exactly the 122 that we saw up at the Riverside this week, so he almost doubled his first class strike rate in this particular game. But as I said, a very entertaining cameo from Rushy, to say the very least. In terms of the rest of this game, Derbyshire did dominate, to be completely honest, and in particular in the second innings, just a couple of players that we have to mention. First and foremost, Brooke Guest. He's having such an impressive campaign in 2022. He scored a quite excellent 116 from 261 balls, 14 boundaries coming in that innings as well. And that was his third century in Division 2 so far this summer. He's been a very good piece of business for the East Midlands outfit. And then someone who is almost synonymous with the modern Derbyshire team is, of course, Laius de Ploy. Matt, a few words on this guy, because in my opinion, he does go under the radar. We mentioned this about a lot of Derbyshire players, in fairness, you know, with the likes of Wayne Madsen, Billy Godman's another one, Alex Hughes as well, in T20 cricket. He's the club's all-time leading wicket taker. Barely ever gets a mention, in fact. But in terms of Laius de Ploy, A, how impressive was he up in Durham this week? But also B, do you think he's a little bit underrated on the wider county circuit, given his repertoire and given the skill set that he does offer for the East Midlands outfit?
Yeah, I think that'd be fair to say, to be honest. I mean, he's never one that comes to mind, is he, when you start talking about the best middle order batters. I think, you know, you have to consider that he's playing in Division 2, obviously, which is always going to provide a little bit of a handicap occasionally. But, yeah, he's done the business. And you have to, I keep talking about these. I'm a big fan of these county professionals that, you know, they know they've got very little chance of ever being picked for their international team. But they get their heads down, they've got a job to do, and they do it. And he's done that for a number of years now. And I mean, you know, he's seen as almost as a leader in that Derbyshire dressing room as well, to the point that he's seized the initiative here. And he does it, yeah, he's fulfilled his role really, really excellently. And he's enabled them to go from, you know, I wouldn't say it was I suppose you could describe it as a bit of a perilous position. I wouldn't say it was a really, really, really backs against the wall type position. But, you know, 36 for 4 is really not where you want to be. And he's enabled them to, you know, when he's out more than 200 runs later, having put on his goal with Brooke Guest, who's another, there you go, good bit of business signing him from Lancashire. Yeah, he's, Duploy is an excellent player, he really is. He's got that ability, he's got that technique, and he's got the work ethic as well, I think, because, you know, when you're playing it, you know, like Derbyshire, he seems to have clicked quite well with Mickey Arthur, because he's, obviously Mickey Arthur, he's not one for gently corralling a team into shape, is he? He's definitely, I mean, I don't think anybody's expecting results, immediate results like he has done, but he's definitely one for, if you talk about the carrot and the stick, he's definitely one for the use of the stick, isn't he, Mickey Arthur? But Luce Duploy has responded to that well. He's got that work ethic. He's willing to put the hard yards in, and it's paying dividends, and he's seen as a key figure in that Derbyshire team that's done so well so far this season.
Well, he most certainly is, and he hasn't had an incredible season by his standards. I'm just looking, 592 runs, average of 53.81 for the South African top order batter. But I'll tell you what, when he is in that vein of form, he's great to watch. He really is. I mean, you can never say that he's boring. His last deploy, a born entertainer, is how I would describe him with the bat in hand. And in this game, two very important partnerships, which kept Derbyshire on top. And ultimately, the East Midlands County might actually be, I wouldn't say disappointed, but I think they would have wanted to have actually secured the victory. They got Durham 7 wickets down. They toiled and grafted away so hard for 83 overs, but they just could not get those final 3 wickets, unfortunately, as the game ended in a very compelling draw. So looking at each of those 4 games then, Matt, what a perfect place to look at the County Championship Division 2 table at the end of the 10th round. Still at the top of Division 2, after 9 matches but 10 rounds, are Nottinghamshire on 159 points. In second, a Middlesex on 138 points. In third, just 1 point behind the Saxes, a Glamorgan County Cricket Club on 137 points. In fourth, still in the hunt, are Worcestershire on 127 points. In fifth, are Derbyshire. I'd say outsiders at the moment, but again, a couple of wins could see them back in the mix. They're on 124 points. In sixth, are Durham on 111 points. In seventh, are Sussex on 93 points. And in eighth and bottom place, still without a win in 2022, are Leicestershire County Cricket Club on 66 points. So round 10, I've got to be honest, Matt, and I put this up on Twitter, this was the round where I think the title race was blown wide open. I think in comparison to Division 1, the Division 2 promotion race, I'd argue, is actually the more gripping and the more compelling, because there's more teams ultimately competing for it. There's 5 teams, in my view, that can still get the job done. And seeing as we are just about to head into the summer break for the Royal London One Day Cup, one final question before we end today's episode. I think you know exactly what this question will be. Looking at those 5 sides, who do you think will get promoted? Let's put in an early prediction at the end of the 10th round.
Well, I can't knock that knock, because I'll get fired if I don't. So I'll say North. I think, you know, 21 points at this stage of the season is enough of a cushion to consider they're definitely the favourites. And do you know what? Yeah, I'm going to go for it. Based on what I've seen of all those teams, and based on how they've played against the team that I would consider to be favourites, I'm going to go for Glamorgan. I think Middlesex are hitting bad form at the wrong time. They're hitting good form at the right time, Glamorgan, that is. And yeah, I can really, really see it happening. And yeah, you know, they obviously, the crucial thing is, whenever you're chasing promotion, whenever you're chasing anything at top of the table, you have to beat the teams that are around you in any sport. You have to be the best, you have to beat the best. It's a cliche, it's horrible, but it's true. And they've done that. The best team in that division on paper are Nottinghamshire, and they've played them twice and they've lost neither of them. They've won one and they've drawn the other. They've dominated and been unlucky to draw the other. So, yeah, I think based on that kind of school of thought, I'm going to go for Glamorgan being the runners-up and heading up next season.
Interesting you say that, Matt, because I would agree. I think Glamorgan will be the second team which get promoted. And it's interesting, just looking back, I listened to the pre-season show with Dustin Melton, actually, the other day. I said Glamorgan were my dark horses. So from a personal perspective, I wouldn't mind them going up. That's all I'm going to say. And also, it has been a few years since Glam have been in the top division. So we'll have to wait and see. It is still early days.
Your predictions are going quite well, aren't they? Your T20 finals, their prediction was spot on as well.
Well, it wasn't, because Hampshire won in the end.
Oh, you said Lancashire, didn't you? Yeah, I did.
I got two out of three.
Yeah, that is it.
We're improving. It was better than the quarterfinals where we went none for four, and that should summarise just how good my predictions have been. But I think that's a wonderful place, actually, to wrap up today's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. Of course, before we do say our final goodbyes for the show, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that, mate?
I tell you what, nothing to plug or promote, but I would just like to extend a really, really big thanks to Lewis, to Gav, and to Jack down at Glamorgan. Absolutely fantastic hospitality this week. Some of the best away food I've eaten. They couldn't do enough for the visiting media. I've no idea if you're listening, gents, but if you are, yeah, an absolutely fantastic 4 days, and you really made me very, very welcome in Cardiff. And honestly, if there's any sort of budding journalists, writers, creators of any sort that want to work in cricket media, have a look at Glamorgan, because they have a really, really good operation going on, and there's some really good people there.
Well, that is wonderful to hear, Matt. It really is. And yeah, of course, I'd echo those words. They are a wonderful club, Glamorgan. They really are. And yeah, they've been very, very nice with us as well. I believe their Twitter admin follows us. So big up to Glamorgan. It's been a very Glamorgan-centric ending to the episode for this week. But you know what? It's nice for a change. It really is. They do deserve a lot of plaudits for their performances in the Championship so far this summer. But that is essentially it from us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To each and every single one of you wonderful listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.